Good morning, Gun Lobby.
Good morning.
God, I love saying that. Good morning, Gun Lobby. How many of you know where that greeting comes from? Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I see Tom back in the back raising his hand. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for caring about your gun rights, about the heritage of this country, and about the Second Amendment. Those of you who haven't heard of my dad, his name was Neil Knox. And he, thank you. Dad was an individual who made a difference just as, and who proved that an individual can make a difference in the fight for freedom and in the right, in the fight for our keep, to keep and bear arms. The most important thing that I wanted to say here today, I've been asked to give a national review, just a national overview, and that's what this, that's the topic of this panel. But, and at a national level, we're in pretty good shape. We have shown the anti-gun forces that the stove is still hot. After the horror of Sandy Hook, the conventional wisdom said something's going to pass. And they rolled out the assault weapons revision, and it was almost, they knew that wasn't going anywhere, and now, as Joe said, they've pretty much admitted it's not going anywhere and it's not doing anything. But they also rolled out a, what they call background check bill, which that's really what they want. And they pushed that, they were counting on getting that through, and they didn't. Now we need to finish that up. The second act of that, it's coming up next month. As Joe mentioned, we've got, as Alan mentioned, we've got an election coming up, and if we don't have something to do with that, then it's going to be painful, folks. The courts are going to be the key. The courts are going to be where we need to, and the courts start in the Senate. And by waiving by rolling those six races, and we may be able to get 10, then we will be able to have, then we're going to have our rights guarded for the next few years. At the national level though, and this is something that I really want to get to, the national level, we have all this, the concealed carry bills, all the loosening, all the increase of freedom that we've seen rolling across this country is traceable back to the Firearms Owner Protection Act of 1986. That's almost 30 years since that passed. Now, the question I have is, what have we done at the national level to continue on the offense? So far, it's been pretty limited. We've got the Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. That was the last flagship bill to go. But even that could have been a product liability reform and probably should have been. There has been no national level push. We have not been on the offense. I was talking to a fellow from New York last night, and he reminded me of a story that Dad had told him, that the way you fight a brush fire, the way you fight a fire out in the woods, is you start a backfire. You have to push that back, and you can guide that fire by starting your backfires. If we make the other side react to us, then we're going to be in good shape. And that's been proven at the local level. That was proven at the national level with the Firearms Owner Protection Act. It's time for another one. We need a strategic view. And that strategic view, what's it going to be? That's for reasonable men to disagree and debate and fight out, but we need to find a strategic national level initiative to push back on the, to roll the cause of freedom forward. But it has to be at a national level, and we need to build on the momentum that we have so far. I hear Juliana's alarm ringing. I don't want to take up a lot of time. I'm available. As you know, as many of you know, I've collected Dad's writings into book form. I'm available. I'd love to talk to you, and let's stay in touch. Come and see us at firearmscoalition.org, and I'll be seeing you through the rest of the conference. Thank you. I was rushing myself. I did want to add one thing, and I knew I had not gotten to that. But have you heard about the ghost gun? Have you seen that video? Well, apparently this guy, that's Kevin DeLeon in California, a legislator. And now there is a new fellow on the, a new crazy man on the national level. And that is another Californian, and his name is Honda. And he is, he's pushing a bill that would basically, if you take that paperwork, that AR-15 lower, and mill it out and do that in your garage, you are now a firearms manufacturer, and he's pushing a national bill to require that you go through all the registration, all the paperwork, all the approvals that are required for any other manufacturer. So I'm not sure exactly how he intends to register every drill press in the country. It's one of these things that doesn't make sense. But what we've seen is that it making sense is not a prerequisite to a law passing. And we have to be aware of that. And so far, again, at the national level, this is going nowhere. But it's the kind of thing that's lurking out there and that will, that's going to pass on, that we're going to have to fight with. The other thing is the action right now is electoral. We've got to be involved in the races. And if you don't have a pet Senate or congressional race to be involved in, find one. Help people get out the votes. And we try our best not to be partisan, but dang it, the Democrats are doing everything they can to make a pro-gun Democrat amidst a contradiction of terms. And if we continue with a Democrat-controlled Congress, with a Democrat-controlled Senate, we're going to have the wrong people in court, the wrong people the wrong judges confirmed, the wrong cabinet members confirmed. I'll give you back the time, and I'll let Larry and Seth come up here and give us a little bit more overview. The last thing I want to say is maybe we should have background checks for the people that work in the FAA towers. But, anyway.
Thank you very much. Could I ask everyone to put their cell phone on vibrate because I would not like the speakers up here not to understand it when it's my ding. They have to be quiet. Larry?
Good morning. We had an interesting insight into the way the mind of the anti-gunners think. I was quoted in Rolling Stone as saying that the Second Amendment's not about protecting hunting, not even really about protecting self-defense. The Second Amendment is about ensuring that you and I have our own private firearms lest the government head off in a tyrannical direction. That caused alarm in at least the office of Representative Carolyn Maloney, bless her heart. The representative said that that was an articulable threat, and she reported Gun Owners of America to the Capitol Hill police. Yeah.
Ignore me.
There we go. I guess you can't ignore that.
That's fine.
And they said, in so many words, take a deep breath, ma'am. That was not an articulable thread. But, you know, I'm wondering if she thought it was, maybe she was really thinking of something that she wanted to do to launch a tyranny here in the United States. What do I know? All I know is the lady was alarmed, and frankly, I'm kind of glad she was, because as I pointed out in, when they quoted me, that's the way they're supposed to be. That's what the Second Amendment is all about. It's keeping them on edge. So Representative Maloney, we're sorry you're leaving office. This is her last term. She's not running for re-election. I hear tones of deep disappointment. I share your pain. Now, one of the good things that's been happening around our country is the rising movement of the constitutional sheriff. The sheriffs that tell the feds, not in my county, get out. We saw it belatedly in the episode of the Bundy Ranch standoff when finally the sheriff realized that he had to behave like a sheriff. And he sent a deputy out to the BLM who were on in a perimeter around the cattle. It turns out they weren't going to sell the cattle to pay for the debt that they said that Mr. Bundy owed for his use of federal lands and grazing. They were going to kill him. They were going to put him in pits that they had dug. And one of the sheriff's deputies went out to the place, the corral, really, where the cattle were. And the townspeople were riding up to release the cattle. And they were all unarmed, and the BLM was fixing to shoot them. And the deputy said to one of the BLM thugs, "Do you want to be known as the people that gunned down unarmed men and women?" Because there were women among those cowboys that were riding up to the corral. And apparently that was what finally broke the situation, and they went away. You know, it's interesting that 15 years before, there was another sheriff, Tony DiMaio, who had actively resisted the feds. And there had been an armed standoff in that same county over cattle that the feds wanted to rustle. So it really matters what kind of a sheriff you have. Sheriff Gillespie was very reluctant to get involved. DiMaio was somebody who actively inserted himself into the situation. One of my favorite sheriffs is a life member of Gun Owners of America, Brad Rogers of Elkhart County, Indiana. He was approached by a farmer in his district. The guy was doing something really bad. He was producing raw milk. And the feds just don't like that. And the FDA was inspecting him 6 ways from Sunday. And finally had so many inspections, he realized they were going to probably pop his land. They had him in court. And so he went to the sheriff, explained the situation. Brad Rogers went out to the farm to inspect it. And didn't see one problem at all. So he went back and sent an email to the head attorney for the FDA and said, "You know, if you put another step on farmer's land, I'll put you in jail." And she wrote back and said, "Well, if you do that, we're going to arrest you." And he said, "Okay, game on." And that was over 2 years ago, and that horrible raw milk is still being produced. That's indicative of what the sheriff can do when he wants to do it. And there are probably some 400 out of the 3,000 or so sheriffs that we have in our country that have made it clear through their actions and their words that that's what they will do. And it's up to us, I think, to do everything we can to get sheriffs elected who will protect our rights, who will stand up for the Constitution, and who will tell the feds, Nah, you're not the boss. You work for us. You're our employees. So I'm encouraged by that. I think that we're on the road to pushing the feds back to making things happen the way the Constitution was intended to make them happen. And I hope you will take some comfort and some encouragement from this kind of situation. Thanks so much.
How's it going? I'm Seth Wall. I'm with the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Thank you. I know many of you are saying, what is a 13-year-old up here doing talking to me? I haven't shaved for a month, so I look 24 today. I'm actually just over 30 years old. I've been working in the Second Amendment realm for basically the past 10 years, starting with working on Capitol Hill. For a member of the United States Senate, which I can attest to Larry's ability to get people to phone call their Capitol Hill offices. I got many of those phone calls many times. I can't say I was the happiest at the time, but now on the other side of the mic, I am very happy for those folks making those phone calls. I've been asked to come in here and pull up my speech first. There we go. And let you guys know a little bit about what's going on at the federal level legislatively. For those who don't know, which by the pause of the applause when I said National Shooting Sports Foundation, you all know who we are. We are the trade association for the firearm and ammunition manufacturers. We have a little over 10,000 members, and we have been working in Capitol Hill for a number of years, advocating on behalf of pro-industry, pro-gun pieces of legislation. So the state of politics right now, as many have heard, or if you've watched any type of news or read any type of newspaper, it is gridlock. There is nothing coming out of the United States Senate thanks to Harry Reid. The House, the Republican-controlled House, has passed hundreds of bills, many of them pro-gun bills, that have sat there and languished in the United States Senate. The House has worked hard on many issues such as Operation Chokepoint. I know some folks have mentioned that already today. I've worked very closely with the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, House Judiciary Committee, and the House Financial Services Committee on working on pieces of legislation to address this. I know Representative Lukemeyer from Missouri has introduced legislation that was passed by the House again. The United States Senate will refuse to take that up once again. One of the biggest pieces of legislation we worked on this past year, which some of you may have heard of, was the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act. This was a major piece of legislation for both shooters and hunters and just general sportsmen. The House passed their version called the SHARE Act last year. And the Senate version included six provisions from the House bill. Some of the things that the bill tried to do was, one, it provided state and fish and wildlife agencies more leeway and how to use their Pittman-Robertson money to maintain or create public shooting ranges on public land. The bill also helped facilitate and provide more access to public land for hunting, shooting, and general outdoor sports. But the most important piece of the legislation, the one of the things that we were most worried about and most really focused on, was the bill clarified within statute that the EPA has no regulation over lead ammunition. And now a lot of you might look at me and say, well, they shouldn't have that anyways, which we agree with. But also, what a lot of folks don't realize is that is the next step that a lot of these anti-gun groups are taking, is regulating lead ammunition. And that's why we need to focus on that more than anything right now. Is anyone here from California? You want to make it out there? Yeah, big game hunting with lead ammunition in California, non-existent now. Because these anti-gun groups and the anti-hunting groups have taken the state legislatures by storm. They've embedded themselves into state fish and wildlife agencies, and they are working to ban lead ammunition. Now the next step, and we've heard this from California, we've heard this from a few other places out west, is they're going after outdoor shooting ranges now on the lead provision. Once they do that, they'll go after the indoor shooting ranges on the lead provision. And they will slowly but surely try to eliminate any lead ammunition until alternative ammunitions are so hard to find because of the armor piercing regulations that are already in place, because of the difficulty in finding some of these alternative metals. Copper mining is obviously being targeted as well, which is another alternative ammunition source. And so we need to focus on preventing EPA and state governments from limiting lead ammunition, from limiting traditional ammunition, and making sure that we can protect that type of ammunition for years to come. There's a lot of, I don't want to say sketchy science, but there is some science that they are using that doesn't quite mesh up in regards to raptor populations eating lead. We have not found any sound scientific evidence to this day that leads to a conclusive decline of a raptor population to lead ammunition or lead poisoning. But not only is that going on, I know a few of you have mentioned already that the anti-gun groups have kind of changed tactics on what they're focusing on. They're no longer focusing on assault weapons or modern sporting rifles, as we like to call them. They're focusing on background checks. That is going to be their next big method of pushing regulations for years to come. Something that we've been fighting against for a long time, something that we'll continue to fight against, but I want to make sure everyone's aware that that is what's coming up. That is what they're doing. And the best way to help prevent any of these things is to change the makeup of the United States Congress, especially the United States Senate. You know, we have a chance this year to flip control of the United States Senate to, as someone mentioned earlier, we don't take sides, we're bipartisan, but we seem to find that the Republican-controlled House has been much more pro-friendly, or much more pro-gun, and friendly to us and our industry than the Democratically-controlled Senate. You know, not only by flipping control of the Senate will we eliminate this gridlock and help get some of these pro-gun bills that the House have passed by the Senate, put on the President's desk where he can either veto them or sign them. We'll find out what he does on those. I'm going to put a good amount of money down like I did at the casino last night that he's going to veto them. But we will be able to push those through. We will be able to put them on record, on more record. The biggest thing that control of the United States Senate means for the Second Amendment is the United States Senate is the ones who approve the presidential nominees. Now, we just saw that our favorite Attorney General, Eric Holder, has decided to step down. Exactly. But where do you think he's going to go? You know, there's been some talk amongst talk radio folks that he might be nominated for the United States Supreme Court. Some have also, I'm not saying I've heard a rumor. It's been talked about. I know Rush Limbaugh spoke about it the other day. We also have heard that the Obama Solicitor General, who was the one who won the Obamacare court case, has also been floated as the next Supreme Court justice that the president would nominate. And a lot of folks say, well, there's no vacancies in the Supreme Court right now. Well, recently a Harvard study has come out and found that the average age of a Supreme Court justice retiring is 78.6 years old. Currently, there's three judges over 78 or at 78, one at 76. So that's four judges that can be nominated in the next the next 2 years as the president is still in office. Now, a lot of folks think, well, okay, he's not going to nominate them. But if we don't win in this year, and if we don't win in 2016, whichever anti-gun, hopefully not, but if there is an anti-gun president, being able to nominate four Supreme Court justices will dictate the shape of the Supreme Court for the next 3 to 4 decades. That is a major coup for the anti-gun groups. We've won our Supreme Court cases by a razor-thin margin of 5-4. We don't want that to happen. We want to win by much larger margins than that. And the best way to do that is ensure that we get a pro-gun Senate who would not approve anti-gun Supreme Court justices and other nominations. And you know, I just want to go through a quick rundown on some of the states. Do I have time for that? 2 minutes? I'm good. So we need to flip 6 Senate seats in the United States Senate to maintain control of it. Kentucky, which is already controlled by Republican. I mention that because it is the minority leader's seat. This is going to be the first $100 million Senate race we've ever seen in this country. $100 million is going to be spent in Kentucky, which is great for Kentucky newspapers, news stations, and their radio ads. But it's going to be a major battleground. We're seeing more and more likely that Mitch McConnell is doing what he's done in the past, which is a seek out and destroy his opponent method. I just learned a recent fact about Senator McConnell. In all of his years of being in elected office, there's only one person who's ever challenged him who's still in politics. Everyone else has been eliminated from politics. So he kind of has a very effective method of clearing the field for him. New Hampshire is a seat that is becoming more and more in play. We're not sure what's going to happen to it. Former Senator Scott Brown, who's not the biggest fan of our issue, but if it means control of the United States Senate, it might be something to take a look at. He is gaining ground, but he still has a large hump to go over. Georgia, you know, anti-gun candidate Michelle Nunn is an underdog right now, which we want to keep it that way. She can still pull it out if something very, very unlikely goes awry. Colorado is a toss-up now. It's just been turned over to toss-up. Cory Gardner is great for the issue. North Carolina, which Senator Kay Hagan, who voted for the Manchin-Toomey bill, is the most likely Democrat at this point to maintain her seat for states that went to Romney. So that's a state that we need to look at. Kansas, Kansas Supreme Court just ruled that the Democrat did not have to be on the ballot. And so Senator Roberts is facing more opposition than he normally does. And so Iowa's on a knife's edge. We have a few others. Alaska is looking better and better. Louisiana is looking better and better. South Dakota, West Virginia, Montana seem to be locks for flipping seats. But I just wanted to go over those. You know, the biggest thing we can do, and I see a few folks. I see Sean Maloney in the back over there, who has worked with me for a number of years on campaigns and elections. Pick your candidate, pick your pro-gun candidate, make sure you work for them, make sure you make phone calls for them, make sure you work and get out the vote for them. If you don't have a candidate who needs help in your area, I know Sean is from Ohio, my home state. He's going to, where are you going, Sean? Connecticut? He's going to Connecticut to campaign. So you don't have to stay in your home state. If you have the means and the methods, go to a state that needs the help, go to a state, knock on those doors, and help flip the United States Senate so we can turn this next year around and have a pro-gun Senate where we can pass good pro-gun pieces of legislation. With that, I'll turn it back over to you.